Hello, everyone, and welcome to Let's Take a Stab at It. I'm your host, John Hoyer, and with me is...
Jason Bartsch. Thanks for having me. When I say it like that, it sounds like I'm a guest, but I'm a co-host.
I am forcing you to be here.
I'm shackled to his wall right now, so please send help if you hear this.
No, I told you don't reference that on the air.
Yeah, like, he's shackled to your wall. Why do you both have different quality microphones?
So, listen, guys, gals, maybe, hopefully, whatever. One of the features of this podcast here is you got two real friends as podcast hosts. You're going to get banter like that. It's going to seem very natural.
Yeah. Well, when's your friend coming?
So, you know, you're going to get that. You're going to get, we're both went to film school. We got some movie knowledge. So you're going to get some knowledge about genre movies, like horror, sci-fi, other, thrillers. Sure. Other things.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the goal of this podcast, like we discussed, is going to be primarily to discuss horror movies, thrillers, sci-fi, noir, stuff like that. And, you know, we don't want to limit ourselves to, you know, to just that stuff and just discussing movies. We also, talked about possibly getting, a screenwriting aspect involved or possibly local filmmakers, short films, stuff like that. So we're kind of trying to keep it open a little bit.
Yeah. So, I mean, so Jason and I, how long have we known each other?
Yeah, I think, we kind of officially met, I'd say about 10 years ago. We, both studied film and media arts at Temple University. We had a lot of classes together and we always sat in close proximity of each other in several classes, but never really kind of struck up a conversation until, I want to say maybe senior year. It was, a screenwriting class, I believe.
Yeah. So, so Jason, he's a very nice guy.
Thanks, like, John.
Shut up. genuinely, he's a kind-hearted soul, and I'm from New Jersey, so that's weird to me.
That didn't sit well with you at all.
me
being nice, you took as a threat.
What does he want? Is he gonna rob me? So we, I had like a project in the screenwriting class, and basically it wasn't well written, so. Everyone hated it. It was like a Danny McBride-esque kind of thing, but it was so poorly written that all the issues in the story of like the character being like a horrible misogynist and racist or whatever, it sounded like that was like what I, the writer, really thought. So everyone was very offended by it. Probably justifiably. Jason and your friend, the other, what was it? I think you both came up and you said something nice about it, or you said something slightly positive. And I was just like, oh, people don't hate me. So that started our friendship.
We became allies at that moment.
Yeah.
We were also in senior projects together. We shot our senior thesis films together.
Yeah. Another situation where things went smoothly for him, but not for me. yeah. So, all right. So why are you listening? We got a concept here. All right. So with a lot of podcasts, there was a lot of focus on like recent release stuff or things that are hitting streaming, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm kind of a weirdo who likes older movies and whatnot. So I was like, oh, it'd be cool if we could have like a podcast that kind of would deal with like a curated aspect to it, where it would be maybe a certain particular genre or like something that's thematically similar. For right now, the concept will be that we're going to be doing a mini series on movies about cults. So what we will be doing is there will be four classic films that we will be digging into, followed by four films that are more recent entries that deal with cults. So right now we have the following films. We'll be doing The Seventh Victim, which came out in 1943, which from my research, the first film that had to do with a satanic cult. So that'll be interesting. I don't think a lot of people have seen that movie. Then we will be doing Rosemary's Baby, The Wicker Man, and the original Suspiria. Those will make up the classics. And then following that, we will be doing the Suspiria remake, Midsommar, The House of the Devil, and The Invitation. So that will take up about 2 months worth of our future podcast endeavor. Each episode will deal with the film itself, but also kind of trying to speak to it in a way of how it fits into like the genre at large.
So yeah, then I think we're both going to bring something different to the table. John is very much a details guy. He's really into the history of these films and kind of the events surrounding them and can kind of really dig deep into the nuggets of knowledge that we necessarily didn't know. And then I, on the other hand, I'm going to kind of offer my insight as just kind of a movie fan in general, a horror movie fan in general, just kind of offer my commentary on it. You know, I'm kind of playing catch up with a lot of these horror movies. I grew up in a house that we had three channels, so I didn't get to watch a lot of TV. My parents strictly adhered to the PG-13 rating. I couldn't watch it until I was 13. And I couldn't watch R-rated movies until I moved out, basically. So I had a lot of catching up to do.
You're going to make me sound like such a dirtbag because I'm going to have to explain that my parents let me watch anything. And like my favorite movie when I was like in fourth grade was Die Hard.
Die Hard.
So I'm like, yeah. Wait, you couldn't watch rated R movies when you were 10? That's weird.
Not under the roof of my parents' house. No, I found ways, you know. Yeah. I would go to my cousins a lot and we'd watch a lot of horror movies and stuff like that. We can get into that a little later. But yeah, so I'm kind of offering a little newer perspective. John is he's very good with the history of these films and kind of you know, where they stood in the genre and culturally at the time and stuff like that.
The best way to kind of put this is that I know so much useless trivia knowledge that would never help me get any sort of job of note. So the best I can do is be a podcaster with
this.
You
just need
info.
To get it off your chest. You need you need to purge this information. This is strictly a vehicle for you to purge the useless information you have.
Yes, exactly. And as you maybe can kind of see from this conversation, I babble nonstop, and Jason's very good at kind of keeping things on track and focusing. And this is great because then things won't be like me talking in circles for 15 minutes about the same topic. You know, he'll, you know, make sure that's not a thing that occurs.
And that's our time for that statement. Okay. All right.
I was waiting for you to cut in.
I thought there was more. I didn't want to cut you off.
Please do.
Okay.
Honestly, I can probably just record myself more if I need to add something.
Sure.
Well, and I just asked you, Jason, can you just say, I agree, John?
Wow, that is a big penis, John.
I'm glad I had that recorded now.
Why am I saying that?
All right. Anyway.
Okay. So we thought we'd do something a little fun here for the first episode. What we're going to do is we're going to discuss our top five horror films, and then we're going to do something a little different and each discuss our top five, what we consider to be the scariest films. And we're going to talk a little bit about the differences, because I know as we were coming up with these lists, you know, there were some films that were on our favorite horror films that weren't necessarily what we considered the scariest. And we kind of wanted to dive into the reasons for that, or maybe discuss kind of the stages of our lives that we were at and different fears we had and stuff like that. So, yeah, John, if you want to just take it away for your, you know, discuss your top five horror films, we'll go from there.
All right. So top five horror films. First thing I have to point out is, before I list them, you all are going to think I'm really basic because I chose a lot of classics.
I believe when you sent me the list, I asked you if you just Googled top five horror movies of all time.
They're very good. I can't help it. It's just my taste. But I have old parents. So, like, I'm blaming them. No, but, like, they're old, you know. My mom's in her mid-60s, and my dad's in his 70s. So, like, I kind of have an affinity for older stuff, honestly. So, all right. Well, anyway, so here's my...
I'm sure they're going to love that you told everyone to this. That when they listen.
I try to show them edits of stuff that are 2 minutes long, and they're like, whatever. I'm going to watch Gunsmoke. Yet they love your short films. Number one, The Shining. Number two, Psycho. Number three, The Thing. Number four, The Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Number five, Alien.
It's a strong list.
Yeah, that I came up with on my own.
Independently of the internet.
Well, you know what? I saw The Exorcist pretty high up on there, and I was like, I like it, but it's not top five for me. So, right. You know, so, I have some discerning taste.
So what do you like about these films? Is there any you want to kind of go back and touch on?
So most of these, I think, are... A lot of these have to do with more of a creating like a sense of dread, or, you know, not having like a lot of these don't have typical, like, you know, like jump scares, or like, maybe, you know, they're not really set piece driven as much as, sure, as like just kind of trying to make the audience feel uncomfortable and creating like a unique atmosphere to it. That's kind of why I like a lot of these, especially, I don't know if Psycho, I guess, really counts as a horror film, but I think it, many would argue, is one of the first like slasher films of the horror genre, I guess. So
I think it absolutely counts.
Yeah. So, I mean, I love Hitchcock. That's like one of my favorites. I've seen that movie at least 10 times since I was little. So,
that's your favorite Hitchcock.
Ooh, no, but
it's probably the one I enjoy. Hitchcock.
It's also probably the Hitchcock movie I enjoy the most to watch.
Okay. So what's your favorite?
Either Vertigo or North by Northwest.
Okay.
Have you seen either of those?
I've seen Vertigo. It's been a while. I haven't seen North by Northwest though.
You're in for a treat, my friend. That movie is just so much fun.
I'll have to check it out.
Yeah, you better.
Maybe I'll start a podcast about it.
I mean, I would actually really like it if we could do like a thriller section, a mini series on thrillers. Cause
dude, I think all are welcome, you know?
Yeah.
We don't discriminate in the horror, thriller, noir, giallo genre.
You're so corny. Do you know? Okay. So Jason is so good at doing like these like cornball like things. Like he came up with the title, Let's Take a Stab at It. And like it's almost frustrating because me at like full capacity for like 2 weeks trying to think of like names for the podcast, and I got some stuff and it was okay. Jason gets 20 minutes and he gets something that's like just the right amount of corny and like clever. And I just like sat there annoyed at him. I was like, I hate him.
So we've established that this is a podcast for you to purge your useless information. And it's apparently a podcast for me to purge the corniness that I have within.
Yes.
All right. So you had Shining, Psycho, Texas Chainsaw, Alien.
Yeah, the first one.
What was your fifth?
Well, you missed a few.
I'm sorry. What was the one I missed, I should say?
The Thing.
The Thing. Okay. Tell me about that one. I haven't seen that one.
All right. Well, sir. Okay. So
John Carpenter.
Hell yeah. He's one of my favorite directors. So I think for a number of years, I had Halloween on that list. And I watched The Thing pretty late. I was in college at the time when I saw it initially. And each time I've seen it, my admiration for it has grown over time. So there's a group of guys in Antarctica, and there's like an alien that is taking the form of different like people. So you don't know who is an alien and who isn't, and it changes shape, and it has like the typical John Carpenter kind of atmosphere, but it's just like a little bit more polished. You know, I do think it's his best film.
Was that a remake or no?
Yeah, no. So that was a remake of, I think Howard Hawks produced, I don't remember the full name, but it was like The Thing That Came From Outer Space, something like that.
The Thing From Another World, it looks like.
There you go. Yeah.
Have you seen that one?
No, I have not. I heard it's like decent, but it's like a 50s like B movie kind of thing. And then I think it came out the same year as David Cronenberg's The Fly, which was also a remake of like a 50s like B movie. And like they both kind of took a unique spin on it, using like really like cutting edge practical effects of the time. Most people would agree those are like the most, those are like the rare occasions where like the sequels are superior to the originals.
So speaking of sequels, you have Alien on here. So Alien and Aliens are both pretty different as far as genre goes. So what's your take on that?
All right. Well, I would say Aliens, the second one, pretty great action movie. But I tend to like Alien a bit more because it is able to, a lot of what happens in Aliens is kind of just unpacking and being more literal and obvious with what's going on in the first Alien. So instead of one alien, it's like a bunch of them. When it's like evil corporation, it's like hinted at in the first, and in the second one, it's overt. So while it is interesting that they expand upon this information, I tend to enjoy the first one quite a bit more with just how it tackles atmosphere. And, it made the alien actually seem more like a more formidable foe than in the sequel, which you get to see aliens get shot up very easily.
It felt like much more of a threat in the first one. I agree.
Yeah.
So I think we'd be remiss if we did a horror podcast and didn't at least dive into The Shining a little bit more. So that's your number one. So what is it about that film? Like, that pops up on a lot of number one lists. Why is that?
Interestingly, for years I had only seen the Simpsons version of it. And I was like, oh, he's going to go crazy because he doesn't have any TV or beer. And I was like, I wonder how like that's like interpreted in like the, you know, a real like adult movie. And, you know, it's a little bit about him not being able to drink. So I think I first watched it though. I was like 11 maybe. And I just thought it was
you started so young. You watched Die Hard when you were like 7. You watched The Shining when you were 11.
Yeah. Well, it's like,
meanwhile, I wasn't
grade.
Even allowed to watch The Simpsons yet.
Well, if you'd let me finish, you'd know I didn't actually, I didn't know what to think of it. I watched it and I was like, this is weird.
No kidding. An 11-year-old didn't know what to make of The Shining. You don't say.
Oh, yeah. Fuck you, Jason.
So So when did you rewatch it?
Well, I think it was when I got into like in like community college, something like that, when I started watching, maybe it's even late high school, started watching like a bunch of Kubrick movies. And it's one of those things that just, it clicked with me more over time as I've seen it, which I probably would say is the case with, all my top horror films. It's one of those cases where it still holds up. And that's kind of why I guess I listed those as opposed to things that are more like recent. I guess it's also hard to know if you watch something like last year, if that's going to be something that's going to like stick with you.
See, I think I can tell pretty early on when a film sticks with me. I have a few really new films on my list. I got my five here in really no particular order, because when John pitched his to me originally, he didn't have them in order, so I didn't either. I got a few honorable mentions that I'll gloss over. Like I said, I had some new ones on my list. I have Get Out and Hereditary definitely in my top five.
Nice.
Hereditary, I think, is just pretty much a perfect horror film. Get Out. I really like when films, especially horror films, incorporate an element of sci-fi, but not just sci-fi that kind of feels grounded in reality. Like if this were to actually happen in today's society, this is kind of how it would happen. I really like that. And so I have a Hitchcock on here as well. Mine's Rear Window. I really like that one.
Nice.
I think it was very, very innovative for its time. Hitchcock, he was always thinking outside the box. And I think that movie is just, it's ahead of its time, and it's, great film if you haven't seen it.
One thing that's interesting about that is if, when you watch it at home, it definitely is, it's a great movie, great experience. But if you have a chance to see that in theaters, which I mean, right now,
I would love to.
We don't know if we'll have theaters again. I don't know. But if you have a chance to see it in theaters, what really works well is the way that it's filmed. Because of the bigger screen, you're able to take in more details of like the various apartments that you see from the perspective of the main character. So it I feel like it is a more rewarding experience, even though like I think a lot of people would say that about like seeing any movie in theaters, but right, I mean, yeah, that specifically this movie is worth seeing.
Yeah, I would love to see that in theaters. I have Eraserhead on here. I guess you can consider that a horror. I just love the atmosphere that movie builds, and its sound design is just unreal, and it adds to kind of the anxiety of the whole film. I think while I was thinking about that and the sound design, a recent film that came to mind that also excelled at its sound design was Mother, Darren Aronofsky. I know you're a fan.
Oh, yeah.
John's a big Aronofsky guy, and I think I might have even liked Mother more than you did, and you really liked it.
I really like it. And I think I saw him in New York once, honestly.
Oh, yeah?
He was with his kid though, so like I felt weird. Like I wanted to be like, I don't want to have like a real conversation. I just be like, Darren, and then he'd look, and I would kind of give him a nod, like, I know. And then he would nod back at me, and that would be great. That's not what happened though. He's with his kid ordering food, and I was like, leave him be.
You think it was him?
I'm like 95% sure it was him. Although he does look like a guy from Brooklyn.
He looks just like a dude. I don't know. I mean, well, if you ever actually meet him, maybe we'll put that story in the podcast.
I'll ask him, hey, were you at the screening of Roma in New York? And he'd be like, I don't know, maybe. Well, as I was walking by, I was going to say something, but I saw him with this kid, and then he asked her what she wanted, and the voice sounded just like his voice in like the commentaries. So I'm pretty sure it was him.
Okay.
But if it was in Philly, like on my, on a area that I'm used to being in
home
a lot.
Turf.
Yeah. Home turf. I would have been like, hey, Darren, what's up? Something like that.
I don't think you would have done that in Philly.
I would have.
Yes. Okay. All right.
Yes.
Next. Next time you see anyone remotely famous in Philly, please, please do that same tactic and let me know how it goes.
I will.
So, Mother, I wanted to put that on my list. I kind of attached it to Eraserhead here. Might be cheating a little bit, but that really got me thinking about how effective sound design can be in horror. And Mother creeped me out when I watched it. I watched it alone, and just like all the creaks in the floor and just like the really exaggerated sound effects that are happening off camera. It's just really fascinating. Apparently, there was a score attached to it by Johan Johansson. A-plus name, by the way. What's the American version of that? John Johnson? It's just amazing. But it's like... They apparently had this this really cool score put together, and Johan said to Aronofsky, like, I don't think this film needs a score, and Aronofsky was fighting him on it. It's just interesting that the composer of the film was pushing for it to be solely sound design, and I think it was really effective.
Yeah, definitely.
So another older film I had that was kind of piggybacking off of Eraserhead was The Night of the Hunter. I don't know if you would technically call it a horror. I guess it's more of a thriller noir. But I think what Eraserhead did with sound design, The Night of the Hunter did with lighting. It really effectively used low-key lighting, lots of contrast, lots of heavy shadows, just lots of atmosphere to kind of build the dread. So that's one I highly recommend. So moving on from there, I had the Blair Witch Project. I'm a sucker for the found footage film when it's done correctly. Paranormal Activity is another good one. I think that genre kind of got oversaturated for a little while. But I think there's a lot to explore there as far as the genre goes.
Mm-hmm. That might be on another list. I might have opinions about that more later on.
So the last thing I'm going to touch on is just kind of an honorable mention. I know it's trendy to kind of hate on M. Night Shyamalan now, but when I was a youngster, I think I was 13 or 14, I saw Signs in theaters. Mm-hmm. And before that, I had watched a lot of movies kind of, you know, with my cousin who was allowed to watch R-rated movies. We watched a lot of slasher films, you know, Halloween, you know, Friday the 13th. I Know What You Did Last Summer, stuff like that. So before I saw Signs, my only real kind of interaction with the horror genre was horror that was right in your face. It was chasing you. It was holding a knife. And this was one of the first films that really showed me that what you don't see can be scarier than what you do see. So it really kind of lit a spark in me to kind of want to watch more movies like that, even want to create movies like that. So I'll throw Signs in there as an honorable mention. And yeah, with that, I think we can move on to your top five, what you consider to be the scariest films.
All right. So I have these in order, I guess, but like, don't hold me to it. They're all kind of close. So my number one scariest, I'm going to go with Hereditary, actually.
Okay.
The first time we saw it, when we, Jason and I saw it in theaters.
Yeah, we saw it together in theaters, yeah.
I remember somebody, I'm not sure if it was you, but someone said something that was like a 2-hour heart attack. I remember feeling this like huge amount of dread, and like, I remember feeling very like affected by it in a way that I hadn't by like a horror movie in like a number of years.
Yeah. You don't feel good for like days after you watch that movie.
So, I remember actually that night, I was staying at Liam's house, and I put a nightlight on, because I'm like in the basement and there's just a lot of like dark space in there, and I kept like imagining like Paimon, was that the guy?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah,
Paimon was like gonna come and get me or something. I was so, and I don't ever feel that way when I watch a horror movie. Like nothing, most things don't stick with me like that.
You thought Toni Collette was going to crawl on your walls.
Well, it's Liam's house, so I don't care. He can clean off the, where do these dirty feet come from? All right. So number two on that, 28 Days Later.
I have not seen that one yet. I know I need to watch that.
What?
One. I know. I might have to change my list when I watch
were
it.
Were you still living at, were you?
When,
were
wait, what year did it come out? I'm sure I was.
Yeah. 2002.
Oh yeah. I was like 14.
Yeah.
Well, nope, that was a no-go for me. I had just started watching PG-13 movies. I was not watching 28 Days Later.
I love that we're like a couple months apart in age, and I'm like, I know what year it came out, and I'm still like, oh, you still lived at home back then?
Still lived at home.
My mom bought it for me from Blockbuster Video.
That's amazing.
So it's
VHS,
like,
you know, or DVD?
Well, VHS. I remember watching that when I upgraded to the DVD, being very surprised that the video quality didn't improve, because I didn't know that it was shot on non-HD cameras.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, it was on XL1, something like that. It was like...
Interesting.
Yeah. So like when you go on, like when you actually watch like the Blu-ray or something, the Blu-ray says it's in like 1080p, but they just up-resed the standard def image. And sold it at a premium cost. Yeah, it looks like dog shit, but intentionally so. What I really loved about the movie was how visceral the filmmaking was, and how like the camera shakes, but not in a way that maybe is like too indulgent. But it feels very like real. And I know there's like a debate online whether or not these are zombies or just like infected people, whatever. I don't care. But to me, what was like really scary was how fast all these things like moved, and how quickly like they could bite someone. And then all of a sudden that person, like they turn immediately. Yeah. And then, so it kind of, in some way, like it reinvigorated the, Nazi. I don't know why I was going to say Nazi. Zombie.
Whoa, what is this movie about?
Zombie genre. But just the idea of me being a, I don't know, fat 13-year-old being like, oh no, they can run now.
You weren't down with that. You weren't down with the sprinting.
I was like, no, I can't. What? But like in keeping with that a little bit, for my number three, I had Halloween.
Okay, there it is. I knew it had to pop up eventually.
Yeah, so Halloween, with kind of in contrast, you know, Michael Myers walks a little slower. So
horrifying, absolutely horrifying. it's on my list too. Spoiler alert.
But like just how he would slowly like hunt people. And you could watch from his perspective as he's watching people who don't know he's there.
Mm-hmm.
Just like so uncomfortable. And like you hear him like breathing in parts, and like just John Carpenter's filmmaking is just so memorable. He has a very classical kind of approach. So very wide frame filmmaking. Just that stuff creeped me out so much, because the sequels were like, you know, they're not really that great. But when I was younger, when I watched that, I remember like I was with my sister. I don't know what age I was, but I was younger, and she, like, we both like kept the lights on or something. Like, I don't think our parents were back yet from work, but we like kept all the lights on. So, cause we were like worried that like we'd go upstairs or downstairs, that like Michael would be there or something. Yep. And like, just like, it just creeped the hell out of me.
Oh yeah.
And kind of also in keeping with that, I'm not sure if you've seen this. Have you seen The Strangers?
The Strangers. Yeah, I have. That movie's really messed up, right?
Yeah, like it's was it
Liv Tyler? It's like a home invasion thing.
Yeah. So
yeah, yeah. Oh yeah, they have the weird masks and.
Okay, so that movie, I'm not sure if I remember a lot of it. This is my number four, if you didn't get it yet.
Sure.
The the thing that I remember most about that, more than anything else, was when Liv Tyler is on the phone, and then you have like some of the home invasion people. They just walk in the background, out of focus, and they just stand there and watch her.
Okay, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, and it's so creepy because it's like they know they can attack her and kill her in that moment, but they're choosing to terrorize her. And like they could get caught watching her, stuff like that. It really like that kind of
home invasion films are just really spooky. I think we can all kind of put ourselves in that mindset. You know, home should be one of the safest places we feel. So when that's compromised in any way, I think that's a fear we can all relate to.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And my dad's like would talk about a lot of that stuff when I was younger. So like that was like ingrained in me. It's like, I have to lock the door. People will be in here if you don't lock the door.
My wife's family never locks the door. I'm pro locking the door. it was baffling to me when we first started going out that they never lock any door in their house. But so far, no home invasions.
Yeah. For a second there, you said my wife, and I'm like, you're married.
At the beginning of this podcast, we tried to build this rapport that we're really close, and that, you don't know. I mean, you were in my wedding party.
It's a groomsman. But it's like, I still don't, I don't know, because we're both, what, 31, right? We're both 31?
Yeah.
I mean, I know I'm 31, but like, I was just making sure. So I'm still like in the mindset of like, we're like a couple of young lads that, you know, getting married for like old people.
So you thought it was silly that I still lived at home when I was 14, but you can't believe that I'm married. Amazing.
I contain multitudes.
All right. Anyway, what's your number five?
All right. Number five. All right. So my number five, it's a movie. It's called Heavyweights.
Heavyweights? Is that the Ben Stiller movie?
Yeah, that movie's terrifying, bro. Because, you know, like, they had to, Ben Stiller takes over the camp, the fat camp.
That's your number five.
Remember he like there's that blob thing that's very fun to jump, and then he like stabs it and stuff and like won't let them eat. That's fucking terrifying, man. No, okay, I'll be serious now. I was really hoping when I was coming up with that bit that you would know what I'm talking about. It wouldn't be like this thing that doesn't like just lands. No,
that's a great like number a thud.
So, but my real number five was Blair Witch Project.
Okay.
And this is why I kind of waited to maybe talk as much as when you brought it up, was that, I'm not sure if you saw that. Did you see that later in life? I'm assuming. Right?
I did. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. But that came out, what, 98, something like that?
99. So, all right, little context here. Sci-Fi Channel had a fake documentary about this like group of people that found the footage of the movie, and that, and like, so, but the whole, all those people are actors, and but Sci-Fi made it seem like it was an actual real like behind the scenes documentary about them finding the footage and it being like this weird location, and how like they kind of assembled the footage together so that way people could get a good understanding of like the final days of these people. So I thought for years that the Blair Witch Project was a real thing.
Wow.
So when
how is that not higher on your scariest list? You thought it was real.
Well, I found out, I don't know. you know, you don't have to like analyze it too much. But like,
it's the point of the podcast.
Okay. All right.
We're not here to analyze films.
Okay.
Ha 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 ha
telling me to hurry it along and you bring this to a complete stop. Okay.
All right. Let's get back on track.
I'm okay now. Okay. All right. So I can't answer your question. I don't know. But
it's a very scary film.
It's a very scary film. But the ending, the last shot where the guy's standing in the corner.
Oh my gosh.
And like the camera like falls down or whatever.
Yeah.
I was like, why is he in the corner? What is happening? It seems, you know, now I guess maybe it's silly that I took it at face value, but in 1999, it was the first R-rated movie I saw in theaters. How old would I have been?
You've been like, what, like 11?
Yeah, maybe 11. So
that's amazing.
As we go through this, you're just like detailing all the times like, oh, this is why he's so warped.
So what's your take on found footage films in general? Are you generally a fan?
I like some of them. I don't know. Like I don't really go out of my way to see something just because it's found footage, but there are a few that I genuinely like. I really enjoy. Like, do you ever see The Last Exorcism?
I did.
Yes. So I really like that one.
We may or may not be talking about that film again in a few minutes.
Oh, okay then. Well, in that case, let's move things along and we'll, you tell me your five scariest.
Okay. So thank you for the segue.
Hey, how good was that? That was good. I want some admiration.
And now we're ruining it. Okay. all right. So the first one I had, I kind of packaged three together. I took a lot of liberties with these lists.
Oh, come on.
I had The Exorcist on there. Exorcism movies just creep me out more than any other movies. I don't know if it's because I'm a God-fearing man and I don't know why that is, but the idea of like something evil needing to manifest in like a human body is just horrifying to me. So the first time I saw The Exorcist was just, you know, terrifying. The spider walk down the stairs. I still think about that, you know, routinely. And that wasn't even added until later, I believe.
Yeah, it was the 2000 version you've never seen or whatever.
Right, yeah. Apparently, back when it came out, they couldn't get it to look good enough. And, it, you know, there were wires or something, and they just thought it looked too fake. And it ended up becoming one of the more iconic scenes probably in any horror film. And then the rest of this bundle is The Last Exorcism, like we just discussed, which is like the found footage exorcism film. And then one called the Exorcism of Emily Rose, which I think is kind of a underappreciated horror film.
I've never seen it, actually.
I really like it. It's I haven't seen it in a little while, but it's essentially someone is on trial for performing an exorcism. And it goes back through the testimony and, you know, the subsequent circumstances that led to this trial. It's really interesting. And, you know, check it out if you get a chance. I think you'd really like it. Exorcism movies, just probably number one on my scary list.
It's weird how, like, so I grew up Catholic, still am. To a certain extent. So like these are my people that are on the front lines with these demons, but I don't know, like it in some ways it creeped me out a lot more when I was younger. As I've gotten older, it doesn't really have as much of an impact on me, I guess, because I guess there's a lot of stuff that came out that some of these things were faked or not true or whatever. But
so exorcisms don't scare you anymore. Possession doesn't. You're announcing to all the evil demons and spirits in the world that your body is a vessel ripe for the taking. They can make themselves at home. You're not afraid.
My obese body that would be very difficult for them to move in. Like they get they get a coronary after like going like, gosh, this is tough, guys.
I'm in the ICU. This isn't what I signed up for.
This Satan stuff, not fun.
I'm going back to hell.
Yeah, easier. I got
hell
like
with
wings.
This place.
So corny.
Anyway,
go on. Sorry.
My next movie is The Ring.
Oh yeah,
that movie. Quite terrifying for the youngster that I was. I saw it in theaters and it stuck with me for quite a while. And then when it came out, I actually bought it from Blockbuster. Blockbuster used to have this deal where you could like pre-order the movie and also get like some sort of like popcorn snack package and like a gift card or something like that. It was a good deal for the time. And I remember I did that and, I went home to watch it, and I just that night I slept in bed with like a baseball bat because it was I watched the DVD on this was what 2002 I believe and I still had an old tube TV, so when I would turn it on it would actually flicker and it would do like the static which is like the found footage film in The Ring, and so like I was even afraid to turn on my TV or turn off my TV because I was afraid it would just linger and the movie would start and then I would get a phone call telling me I would die in 7 days. I don't know why I thought sleeping with a baseball bat would help me, but it made me feel better. So I think I might have even left the TV on after I watched that movie so I didn't have to turn it off. But yeah, I mean, that movie, it's just like, it's just drenched with dread. Like from the moment it starts, it's like you can tell nothing good is going to happen in this film. So, yeah, that was on my list.
I think it's interesting how like, so that was actually, I was debating between Blair Witch and The Ring, honestly. Mm-hmm. And that movie scared me so much when I was younger, but like, I think the ending of it kind of makes me like, I could overcome this.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like,
I will say that the tape itself holds up. That's still creepy. That's a creepy, a creepy little film. I like the joke the one character makes about it being a very student film and kind of like analyzes it. I always appreciated that. So moving on, this one's kind of my wild card of the list. Jeepers Creepers. I don't know if you've ever even seen this.
I did years ago, but I remember thinking it was pretty good.
It was quite scary. I think the movie probably started a lot stronger than it ended. It showcased a young Justin Long, who's just really great at kind of playing the nerdy everyman who like, you know, is really endearing, but also kind of a little neurotic. And just like this creepy guy that like sews bodies together down this well. It's just like really, really bizarre movie. That one always stuck with me. So the next movie I have on my list is The Witch. That's the newest one I have on my list. That's another one that's just kind of soaked in dread the whole time. Just does a really good job of building the atmosphere, the New England folktale angle. I really like, you know, that movie really creeped me out. And I was surprised as, you know, an older person, I was probably in my mid to upper 20s at the time. I was surprised at how creeped out I felt while I was watching it. Mm-hmm. So when I was making this list, you know, that's something I felt I had to add just because of that. Cause in recent memory, you know, that one's pretty scary.
The third act of that is so like strong.
Oh yeah.
Like where it goes. And I remember feeling like uncomfortable about like, I don't know, like this is something I shouldn't be watching right now. Like
right,
these
right.
people are going through some things. I don't want to see this. You know?
Yep. And I still stand by the fact, I know you and I have discussed this before. I stand by the fact that it's one of the coolest trailers I've ever seen. So if you haven't seen the trailer for that, check it out. It's very well done.
Oh yeah.
And then the final one on my list, you touched on it earlier, was Halloween. For a lot of the reasons you said, I think you summed it up nicely. You know, it's such an iconic film in the slasher genre. And you know, his slow walk and just his gaze and his, you know, his dead eyes, just his dark dead eyes. And, you know, and the scene when he has the bed sheet over him and he's just like staring, you know, stuff like that. I just like, you know, really creeped me out.
Or when he stabbed the person and then he tilts his head.
Yeah.
Like looking at it like, oh.
Yep. Do you have anything else to add to any of those films or anything else you wanted to say?
No, I think we're pretty good. Want to just wrap it up then?
Yeah, sure.
All right. Well, thank you everyone for tuning in for the first episode. The next one you'll hear will be reviewing The Seventh Victim. Hopefully you guys can check that out. I think I've seen it on iTunes, so it's definitely available on there.
How do we sign off? Do we need like a phrase? Do we need something?
Oh, I don't know.
Your friend in horror? I don't know what. Can we just like riff like this and bring the music up? Does that work?
That works, yeah. Let's okay. Do that. Music's playing, getting louder.
End scene.
All right. Well, we love you all very much.
Thanks for listening.
Bye-bye.
Wow, that is a big penis, John.